So we'll try to figure out what the spirit of the age is, the world in 2024. So it's anyway, the questions that I sent out, basically just scriptures to think about, and as you analyze our country and world conditions, what would you say the current spirit of the age is? What is the, if you could summarize the spirit of the age, what would it be? So, Bob, hold on a second.
Hatred.
Hatred? Okay, so we got hatred. Is hatred a problem in our world today? I mean, we got some serious hate going on. Okay, Bob?
How about lawlessness?
Lawlessness, yes. Christ said that lawlessness would abound, and we see that in the world as we look around us. Okay, Steve?
What I discern is a post-Christian, post-truth age that we're living in.
Post-Christian, post-truth. I would say that's accurate. Post-Christian, post-truth. Okay? All right. To your right. Left. Excuse me. My right.
I was thinking, I see an awful lot of division in the world.
An awful lot of what?
Division.
Confusion?
Spirit of division.
I think there is a lot of confusion. I think that's unquestioned, that there's a lot of confusion. Any other words you might use? I think it just, okay, they're going to get somebody else, and then we'll come back to Jen. Okay, Rich?
Hedonistic narcissism.
What is it, narcissism?
Narcissism and hedonistic.
Narcissism and hedonistic, okay. And Jen had a comment. She raised her hand. Okay, here we go.
Oh, mine is similar. Selfishness.
Selfishness. All right. So, you know, as you look at the list of Paul's description of the end of the age, all of those, you know, are found in there one way, shape, or form. And they're all trends that are not good at all. And as you, the one word that I thought of was chaos. There is a lot of confusion, a lot of chaos, and an unusual, we've always had chaos, but it's at an unusual level currently, that things have become so chaotic and it seems like people are promoting chaos, and to me it's like, okay, you're promoting chaos. I never want to do that, because if I'm promoting chaos, what's likely to happen? You're likely to get to the end of the line with chaos, and guess who's going to be sucked into the chaos and all of the negative results? I think it's going to catch me. It's like, you know, you're trying to feed the alligator with the hope that you'll be the last one the alligator eats. I think there are people, it seems, that believe that you can promote chaos for your ends, and that you're going to promote the chaos and it's all going to collapse, but you're the smartest person in the room, and you're going to be able to corral all the chaos for your own ends and work out what you believe you can work out, which I'm thinking, I doubt that's going to work out the way you think it's going to. You know, it's like people have ideas of what's going to happen, and it doesn't work out the way they thought. You go back and you think of the great ideas that were becoming prevalent at the beginning of the 20th century. For instance, the idea that we evolved. All right? We evolved. So we weren't created. There is no God. We evolved. And so we all reached the point of where we're at based upon the survival of the fittest, and that's a true principle. It's just life. It's just the way it is. You had ideas like, you know, there is no God. You had everything is relative, you know, based upon Einstein's theory of relativity, everything is relative. He came up with that concept, and people bought into it. It became popularized. And what was the outcome? And I mean, somebody recommended to me a book called Modern Times. Anybody heard of the book Modern Times? It's a outstanding book by, do you remember who wrote it, Paul? Pretty good historian. We went to see him in Dallas years ago. He made a presentation. But Modern Times is a pretty good book talking about history from around the turn of the century up until about the time of President Reagan. Pretty interesting, and how things worked out. And for instance, think about relativity. Think about evolution. And think about no God. And did anybody take those ideas and apply them? And base their country and how they operated based upon those principles? Anybody remember anybody who applied those principles? Several countries did. Bob? Yeah, Hitler, yeah, they were all in on evolution, okay? They were all in on evolution, and we are the Aryans, and we're more fully evolved than all the rest of you losers. And they looked down on all of these other nations and peoples, and what did they seek to do? What did they do? Why did they apply the final solution to the Jews and others? Why were they so hell-bent on wiping these people out? Because they felt they were superior, and they were aiding evolution by getting rid of all these inferior people. And they fully believed in what they were doing, which is astounding. How do you come to that conclusion and carry it out? But they did. I'm reading a book that's about the Nazi, called The Nazi Conspiracy, which has been kind of interesting. It's not all new, but it's talking about the Nazis came up with the idea of killing Churchill, Stalin, and Roosevelt. So they had a plan to kill all three of them, and they had and they were preparing for the conference that was to take place in Iran, and so they were going to kill them there. And they actually had soldiers and spies there in the country, and they were hoping to accomplish that. And in going through this plot and everything that goes along with it, they're talking about the war, and they were talking about the invasion of the Soviet Union by the Germans. So the Germans invaded, went into those eastern countries, the eastern part of Russia, and went into those countries, and they just steamrolled the whole thing. But in going through all of those countries with the German army, what were they doing? They were exterminating people. They had they came up with this idea, the Blitzkrieg. You know, you just blitz everybody and wipe them out. Well, they had a thing called kettle war, and what they did is they would surround a town or city, completely surrounded, and cut off any way for them to escape except to go toward Russia. And then they would begin, they just unleashed everything on it and would wipe it out. And it was just vicious and cruel. And the thing was that people didn't like the Russians. And so here come the Germans, and surely the Germans are going to be better than the Russians. And they would welcome the Germans. But the Germans, forget that. You people are inferior. So they would welcome them, and they would look forward to the Germans ruling. It's got to be better than the Russians. And then you had the Germans seeking to exterminate them, where they became less than happy with their new rulers. But they didn't have the vision to see that, you know, if we treat these people properly, it may go better for us. And so they were just vicious and cruel and murdering and destroying. And so when the Russians forced them to retreat, they had to go back through these same places. And all these people remembered what it was like when they first came through. But you can see this, you can see what was taking place there is not a godly mindset at all. As you look at what was taking place in Germany and in different parts of the world, it was not godly at all. And so you have this mindset, what you might call the spirit of the world, that was predominant. And it just, you know, millions and millions of people died during World War II. And what for? But it's, you got to think about now, what mind was motivating these people? It's not a godly mind, it's a satanic mind. And this satanic mind wants to destroy me and you. And what was he doing? He was reveling in all of this death and destruction and just thinking, how great is this? And God allowed it to go forward. And it was horrible, the results of it. And where we're at today is you have people who I fear we're headed down the same path. Is it going to be exactly the same? I don't think so. But when you look at the spirit of the age, you might call it, it's called, you know, if you were, say, that word, do you know where spirit of the age comes from? It really comes from German. It's called Zeitgeist. You may have heard of Zeitgeist. And Zeitgeist means, and the Geist is the spirit, and Geist is the age, the spirit of the age. And so there is a spirit that is influencing the world as we go forward. And to me, you can see it. You've mentioned different words, you know, that you've come up with as that kind of gives you an idea of your observation. And when you break down into chaos and cruelty and all of the things that we see unfolding, it's not going to end well. And for you to think that it is delusional. But man's been deluded many times and believes, well, if I destroy everything, it's going to work out great. I'll get to make it the way I want. Now, who do you trust to remake the world in a way that people are going to enjoy? I'm not sure. Just think about this. I don't know whether you're familiar with it, but we had this terrible destruction of people in Israel that took place on the at the end of the feast on the last great day. The last great day represents something so wonderful, if you understand it, and yet you have this slaughter that takes place on that day. So who would come up with this idea of slaughtering all of these Jews, no matter how much you hate them? But that's what was done, and it's, you know, there's not a good spirit there involved with that. When you're promoting hatred, which was mentioned as a trend in the at the end of where we're at now, there's going to be no good that comes from that. And how many of you know what was going on in Israel? So this is before this whole attack takes place. What was going on in Israel before the attack started? Does anybody know? The what?
The music festival?
Yes, there's a music festival. So as you think about the music festival, I kind of have an idea. We've got some bands playing and they're playing music, but that's not really what... There was music, but the whole thing was not good. You know, you've got music and drugs, sexual things. All of this is going on with this festival, and here it's going on right across the border from Gaza, and it just makes me wonder what kind of spirit was there, and all these people are involved with it, and then all of a sudden here comes this terrible attack. Just, you know, I can't say for sure because I can't see everything, but something was definitely wrong going on there that's not good. And the people of Israel are not perfect. I mean, they're not all worshiping God. They weren't, you notice that they're not keeping the Sabbath. They were not keeping the last great day. Sorry. I'm sure there was music there that would fit with that idea at all. But that's the thing, is they don't discern, okay, I'm doing this and it's promoting something that I don't really want to be associated with it, but I don't understand what is really going on. I don't see it. So there was something going on in Israel. I'm not saying that, I can't say for sure that everything that happened to the people of Israel happened because of this, but it wasn't a good trend that was going on with the people of Israel. So it's... And I'm not most assuredly not saying they deserved it. I'm just saying that you're involved in ideas and practices that most definitely are not biblical. And so something interesting that was taking place, and you look at what's taking place in our country, as I said, there's a spirit that is influencing what's happening today. And that's where you say, well, I'm not worried about that. It's not affecting me. It's not affecting you. We all live in peace and no big deal going on. Well, that can change pretty fast. So you have to realize that we've got to be aware that there's a spirit of the age, and the spirit of the age currently is not God's spirit. It's a different spirit that is antagonistic to God, that it's antagonistic to his way of life, that's antagonistic to his church, antagonistic to even the physical people of Israel. And I think the fact that you have all of this anti-Israel, anti-Semitic stuff going on, which I don't know about you, but I was surprised how widespread this is. And it was surprising. I just was amazed by it. Still am. But anybody have any other thoughts? Because I want to look at 1 Corinthians chapter 2, if no one does. Let's go to 1 Corinthians chapter 2 and begin in verse 6. So in 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 6, to me, this is a most wonderful exposition on, you know, God's spirit and the world and the predominant spirit and things. I think it's very helpful to look at this. Let's go to begin in 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 6. It says, however, we speak wisdom among those who are mature. So who are the mature? Who are the mature that Paul's talking about here? The mature are Christians, people that have a relationship with God. They're speaking to those who are mature, yet not the wisdom of this age nor the rulers of this age who are coming to nothing. So, you know, so he's making a statement that's pretty interesting. He says, he's speaking wisdom to the mature, yet not the wisdom of this age. So does this age have wisdom? Does it have wisdom? Sure it does. Now, it's not God's wisdom, but they have a certain wisdom, but it's not necessarily biblical. And he says that you have people that are rulers of this age, people that are in charge, that are running things. And as you think about them, and what page are they on? Are you any of you worried about the World Economic Forum and its influence on you and your household and your family? Do you think the World Economic Forum is positively arrayed toward Christianity? I don't think so. I mean, when all you had to do, if you looked at any of the World Economic Forum stuff that took place, if you look what was going on there, they had a shaman come in to bless some sort of presentation. Okay, I'm not having a shaman come and do blessings on anything I'm doing, because that is not of God, most assuredly. But they're open to that kind of thinking. They're open to these world religions and things like that, and they don't see that there's anything wrong with it. There's no Christian prayer going on. It's the shaman offering up this prayer. So you've got to, and this is part of the spirit of the world that is, these people are well-to-do, these people are powerful, and they buy into this. So they're not making any move against you at this point, but you have to think there will come a time when that may very well happen. So you have this shaman praying, and then they go on with whatever they were talking about, which I think had something to do with climate change. But that's kind of scary to have that happen. And there's this trend that has taken place in society in regard to, for instance, I remember that, are any of you familiar with the religions of the pre-Columbian peoples? Okay. What was common to those pre-Columbian cultures? Anybody remember? Or no? What was it? Human sacrifice. Oh yeah, you've got that great big tall temple, and you've got people up there, and you're lopping off their heads and then letting their bodies, the blood run out, and the bodies rolling down the steps. If you look at, have any of you ever been to Chichen Itza, which is a Mayan site? It's pretty interesting. If you go to the ball court, as an example, and you go to the ball court where you've got to get this rubber ball through this little hole, like basketball, except it isn't horizontal, it's parallel to the wall, and you got to get that ball through there. So what, as you think about this, what happened to the losing ball team? No, the losers weren't killed, the winners were. What's that? may have been, but I mean, the winners were killed, sacrificed to the god, and it was a privilege for them to be sacrificed. I'm thinking, okay, guys, I'm losing this. I don't want to win because I don't want to be executed. But they believed in it enough to where they were willing to do that. And if you look at the bas reliefs that have been carved into the stone there, you've got people's heads being chopped off and all this blood rushing out. It's pretty graphic. I'm thinking, okay, who's going to be involved in such a thing? But they believed it and supported it, and big crowds showed up to watch this. They were probably willing to watch because they weren't the ones that might be executed. But as you looked at that, that's just, you know, and it's become acceptable, you know, as you look at that pre-Columbian culture and human sacrifice. You know, there was somebody pointed out that at San Diego State, they put up a statue of Quetzalcoatl, the Aztec god, who's a bloodthirsty god, requiring human sacrifice. And it's become acceptable in our culture. And it's become acceptable again. Witches and all of these kinds of things that at one time went away or were greatly diminished. But you've welcomed them back into the mainstream culture. I think Darris McNeely wrote an article about the fact, have the old gods returned? Makes you wonder, have they? Those old gods are demons. They've not gone away. It's just you accept them more and you welcome them back into your society. And what is their intention? It's not good. The fact that they've influenced you to accept human sacrifice tells you, I don't know whether we want to be involved with these gods. But that's the kind of thing that we've accepted, which is not going to go well. You know, God said, look, you know, back in the Garden of Eden, he said, look, here's the way that you can enjoy, have your best life. Don't eat of that tree. You can eat of all the rest of the trees, but don't eat of that tree, because in the day you do, you shall surely die. And you're going to set a trend that is going to end up with a lot of sorrow, death, destruction, and misery. Don't do it. But that's exactly where mankind went under Satan's influence. So it's scary. So, you know, God has, you know, tells us here in 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 7. He says, but we speak the wisdom of God in a mystery, the hidden wisdom which God ordained before the ages for our glory. So, did man ever have access to that knowledge? It says it's hidden wisdom, but was it always hidden? I don't think it was. God was willing to give man full access, to give him full understanding of the magnificent things that God's going to work out. And that's what Paul is writing about here, that God, understanding God and his plan is a mystery. People don't know what it's about. But God wanted to make that available to everyone, and he's revealed it in the scriptures. He's given us access to it. And he talks about these things that were hidden in before the ages for our glory, which none of the rulers of this age knew. Now, why didn't they know? These are the smartest people. These are the World Economic Forum people. Why didn't they know? I mean, the World Economic Forum people don't want to know this. That's not part of their agenda. They don't want to know this. But God would have made it possible for them to understand. So the rulers, the smartest people in the world, don't understand. They've been educated. They have money. They have everything that life can give them. They have the best that that can be had, but they don't see the bigger picture. And so they're inviting in shamans and things like that, which is not a good trend for people to be involved with. And, you know, like it says here, if they had been truly tuned in to what God's plan was, they wouldn't have killed Jesus Christ. They wouldn't have killed him. But the rulers of the Romans and the Jews, they had no interest in what Jesus Christ was preaching. and they were willing, we got to eliminate this guy because he's a problem. He goes on to say in verse 9, but as it is written, eye has not seen, nor ear heard, nor have entered into the heart of man the things which God has prepared for those who love him. So God, you know, we can rejoice in the fact that God has given us understanding of these magnificent things that he's going to work out. And he's given us discernment, a blessing that comes to us through his Spirit. And we can see the bigger picture and have that bigger picture as our purpose for living and pursuing. As he says, as Paul says in verse 10, but God has revealed them to us through the Spirit. So God has helped us to begin to see things that we never, ever would have seen unless we had God's Spirit. So God has given us his Spirit, and through his Spirit, God is working to help us understand and apply. And God's Spirit is truly a powerful force if we will yield to it. And that's the crucial thing, is yielding to it. It says, for the Spirit searches all things, yes, the deep things of God. For what man knows the things of a man except the spirit of man, which is in him? So we each have the spirit of man in us. Does anybody understand what the spirit of man is? Is it our human soul? It's not. But what is the spirit of God? How would you explain the spirit of God or the spirit in man to someone? Yes, Fred?
It's the spirit of thought, consciousness, and maybe even conscience.
Yeah, the spirit in man helps us to, you know, we're not, God created us above the animals, and so that we could be more closely akin to him, and he didn't give us, you know, the spirit of God. He did give us the spirit in man, which allows us to think and to plan and to rationalize and have all of the good things that can come as human, just physical human beings. It's not God's spirit in the sense that it dwells in us and leads us into all truth, but we can figure out how to build bridges, we can figure out how to make aqueducts, we can figure out how to make canals, we can figure out how to get a rocket up to the moon. We can figure those things out. They're physical things. And we can figure that stuff out. And, you know, as we have the spirit in man, it separates us from the animals. So we're not going to, you know, animals do not have some great plan. Okay? They don't. You know, the cows don't have some great plan about the cow kingdom. Dogs don't have the dog kingdom. They're not thinking in those terms. You know, they're thinking about, okay, I want to go for a walk. I want to get fed. I want to have a bed to sleep on. I want all the dog stuff that I can possibly have. But they're not thinking about, wow, let's build an art museum with dog art. They're not thinking about anything like that. It's not even on their radar. So anyway, it says, Paul goes on to say, you know, we can understand the spiritual things because we have God's Spirit. And God's Spirit helps us to understand the magnificent plan of God and to understand where God's going. And he's invited us along to be a part of it. And he says here in verse 12, now we have received not the spirit of the world. So what's the spirit of the world? That's the spirit we left behind. The spirit that was predominant in our lives as we just lived lives and our focus was on carnal, selfish things. That was all we thought about. That's all the breadth of knowledge and understanding that we had. But God has given us his Spirit to see the big picture and what's really important. And so we have not received the spirit of the world, but the Spirit who is from God, that we might know the things that have been freely given to us of God. We're able to understand things that we would not understand otherwise. And generally speaking, people don't have an awareness of these things. So verse 13, for these things we also speak, not in the words which man's wisdom teaches, but which the Holy Spirit teaches, comparing spiritual things with spiritual. And then in verse 14 he says, but the natural man does not receive the things of the Spirit of God. So when you tell people about spiritual things, what is their reaction? Yippee! Thank you for telling me that. No. They don't see it. They may not be hostile. Some people may be hostile. And you notice, and it's interesting, as you look at the spirit of the world, there are some people that are more influenced by the spirit of the world than others. And so as you, as a Christian, get around them, you will find that they're openly hostile. You've not done anything to them, but they detect something in you that they don't like. And they're hostile. I know that this minister that I was visiting with, we were visiting a mental health institution in St. Louis. And so we had to go to a certain floor to meet one of the patients, and we're going up to this floor and we're in the elevator, and there's one of the people that was in the institution in the elevator with us. So I'm standing there and this minister I'm with is standing there. And the next thing I know is this fellow that's in the elevator with us is looking at me. And the minister I was with thought, well, he was kind of laughing because he knew what was going on. He said, and I would say this fellow that was looking at me so intently did not have a right spirit. And so here I am, and he's looking at me. I was a little uneasy, and nothing happened, but he knew what was going on because he had been around enough to know. So anyway, he was laughing at me, and I thought, well, I feel kind of uneasy. Don't be laughing at me like that in the future. But anyway, we everything went fine, but there was just something off when you were there. And sometimes we run into that because as Christians, we have God's Spirit. We're not doing anything. God's Spirit is just in us, and God is leading us. But somebody that has an antagonistic spirit may act antagonistically toward you. Some people might become violent. Not saying they will, but it's possible because they're opposed to you. So, people that haven't been given that insight, it's considered foolishness by them. So we are no longer natural people because we have God's Spirit. And God is continuing to work in us. It says in verse 15, for he who judges all things, yet he himself is rightly judged by no one. For who has known the mind of the Lord that he may instruct him? But we have the mind of Christ. And we are blessed to be able to have the mind of Christ. Now, when you think about, let's go to the book of Romans chapter 1. And the book of Romans is interesting because Paul is contrasting the church and the world and the direction that people in the world went. And we're not going to read through the whole passage, but just one part of it. As you look at what Paul is describing here, God made knowledge of God clear at the beginning of his interactions with humanity, with Adam and Eve. And he gave them insight and understanding to a degree, but we all know Adam and Eve decided to go a different way. And so the insight and understanding that was available to them as God placed them in the garden, they could have gone who knows how far, if they had chosen to follow God, how much of an impact would it have had on agriculture, you know, raising livestock, farming? What could you have produced if you had stuck close to God? But once you rejected God, you went in another direction, which has proven not to be good. And like it says here in Romans chapter 1, verse 21, it says that although they knew God, they did not glorify him as God, nor were they thankful, but became futile in their heart, in their thoughts, and their foolish hearts were darkened. So they were enlightened as God began to work with them, but they rejected God, and God allowed their hearts to become darkened. Did God darken their hearts? To a degree, maybe, but they darkened their own hearts. They didn't want the light to shine in their hearts and give them understanding. So their thoughts became futile, and their foolish hearts were darkened. And that's the path that you go down when you reject God. So when you look at the in Romans chapter 1, verse further along in the chapter, it talks about God gave them over to a debased mind. So how would you describe to somebody what a debased mind is? What is a debased mind? Does the world we live in now, is that debased mind influencing the world? Consider who has the most debased mind of all. Satan has the most debased mind of all. His mind is completely and totally debased. And there was a situation where somebody that was demon-influenced came to Ambassador College, and they wanted to talk to somebody. And the person that often talked to them was Dr. Hay, and so he was going to talk to this individual. And the individual asked Dr. Hay, how can we get God to come over to our side? How can we get God to come over to our side? I thought, wow, I don't know whether I'd want to talk to that guy for very long, but anyway, how can we get God to come over to our side? Because they have no interest in God's side. They don't want to be on God's side. They made a decision to reject God and his side. And they're working against it, actively working against it. And which for me, you know, I was fairly new in the church, and that was like a shocker. Really? You're not going to come over to God's side? And the answer is absolutely not. We have no interest in that. So you see that I think the debased mind is the predominant influence today. And as you look at what Paul talks about in Romans 1, he talks about where man rejected God and describes basically you're going downhill. And he does it three times in the chapter. And so you basically adopt certain practices and certain outlooks and approaches, and God allows you to go downhill. And the debased mind is the bottom of the barrel. You're at that level. And that's, unfortunately, I think, a predominant mindset today. It was mentioned that lawlessness abounds. Any of you note that lawlessness abounds? So in your mind, what stands out as far as lawlessness abounding? I have something I think of when this is said. Anything you think about? What about all the people going into stores and just cleaning them out? Everybody's got big trash bags or whatever, and they're loading them up. And I don't know whether they have calculators or what, you know, because you can get away in California with a certain amount of money, and as long as you're under that, you're good. But that's like shocking. And you're, if you're a guard working at whatever store it is, I mean, you're supposed to try to. I mean, remember when they used to have theft prevention? They don't have theft prevention anymore. And if you try to prevent it, you're probably going to get in trouble. But to me, that's just one example of lawlessness. What about the, you know, in New York, you just recently had several people attacking the police. And they arrested them, and they were back out on the street in hours. That's lawlessness. And by your letting them out, is that really promoting what's right? I don't think so. I'd be thinking about, I'm not sure I want to be a policeman in New York City or some of the places where you do not hold the standard. So you have lawlessness which abounds, and what's in the same verse it talks about what happens as lawlessness becomes common. Lawlessness becomes common, what else happens? At the end of that verse it tells you. So we're in Matthew chapter 24, verse 12, and it says that something happens as a result of a lawless tendency prevailing. And it tells us the love of many will grow cold. So when there are no bounds, you're able, you know, like we talked about license, you have license to sin, then you become hardened. And the natural feelings of love and concern, which are common to human beings, no longer exist. And you become hardened in your lifestyle. And you're not, you know, who cares? Your love, your natural outgoing concern for people is no longer there. And more we sadly see that kind of thing. So, final scripture, 1 John chapter 5, verse 19. 1 John chapter 5, verse 19. So, John is talking to people who are Christians, and he notes, we know that we are of God. So he's speaking to Christians and said, we know we are of God. And then he says, the whole world lies under the sway of the wicked one. The whole world lies under the sway of the wicked one. Would you say that that is true? So what causes you to conclude, yes, that is true? And John was saying this in, you know, before he died. Near the end of his life, around the first end of the first century, he's saying that the whole world is under the sway of the wicked one. So he observed this in his time. And the world has had its ups and it's had its downs since then. But I think we're in a condition now where the sway of the wicked one is widespread. And I don't think we're going to back off of that. And if you look at what's going to take place at the end of the age as the final scenario plays out, you know, which is talked about in the book of Revelation, there is no good that's going to come from it. In fact, God allows Satan and the demons to predominate. And he basically is saying, okay, people, you wanted this, you're going to get it in spades. And it's going to be horrible what unfolds. And I'm not trying to scare you. I'm just saying you're on a trend that is not good. And we don't want to go down that path. So we can be discerning. We can be faithful. And we can be faithful to the end. And as we face all these things that we have to deal with, then we can seek God's wisdom. How do we deal with this? How do I do this in a way that is pleasing to you? Did any of you note what took place to some anti-abortion protesters. What happened to them this week? They were convicted. Different ages, they're going to do 11 years. 11 years for sitting in an abortion clinic. They didn't stop anybody from getting an abortion. They didn't do any of that. But they were singing. They were praising God. They didn't attack anybody. But because the powers that be have come to the conclusion that this is unacceptable, then they're going to prosecute them. And they're not the last ones. I think there are a couple of 70-year-old ladies in prison that are going to suffer the same consequence. So that's a scary trend. You know, we may not be protesting or something like that, but they're on the forefront of it because they're out there standing up for what they believe in. So we may not be on the front line, but if we believe it, don't believe that, they're never coming for you. Because they are. Eventually, we're all going to be challenged on what we believe. And we're going to have to, okay, I know what I believe. I know I believe it. And I'm going to stand up for it. And, you know, that's just what's happened to God's people throughout the ages. And it's going to happen at the end of the age as well. So, anyway, it's a... It's just some things to think about, where we're at in time and what's working out here right before our eyes. And, you know, it's not, you know, we look at the news, and I know my wife tells me Liz tells me fairly often, you know, she can't look at it. It's just too depressing to look at it. We know that it's there, but you don't want to be looking at it. I mean, I remember. Something I'll always remember is a minister, this was years ago, and this minister said he couldn't take it, I can't watch the news, so he said, I'm doing a news fast. And so he stopped watching the news for a while because it was too overwhelming. And sadly, some of the things taking place are that way. So the thing we must do is we need to continue to pursue God, ask God for discernment, ask God for his wisdom, and ask God to continue to work in our lives and help us to be prepared for whatever comes, that we can meet the test and that we'll be pleasing to him. And as we seek God and have that approach, we'll get through it and we'll be assured of the kingdom of God. So thanks everybody for your attention, and that will end the Bible study.